A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one, and I have to say, it's the kind of question that makes you realize how many invisible systems are running just beneath everyday life. He's asking about those prepackaged sandwiches you get in hospitals, on airplanes, at corporate events, the tuna salad, the egg salad, the cheese baguette in a plastic wrapper with an expiration date 2 weeks out. They're not gourmet, but they're edible, they're shelf-stable-ish, and when you're a working parent with a one-year-old and no family nearby, and both of you running businesses, they start looking less like sad cafeteria food, and more like meal insurance. His question is, can an individual tap into the institutional sandwich supply chain? Can you set up a standing weekly order and just have a fridge full of fallback meals? And he's willing to buy through his business, call it an ongoing conference, which, honestly, home life with a toddler kind of is.
This is one of those prompts where the question seems absurd for about 4 seconds, and then you realize it's actually brilliant, and there's a multi-billion-dollar industry hiding in plain sight that nobody thinks about until they're stuck on a canceled flight at midnight eating their third cheese baguette.
The cheese baguette moment of clarity.
Let's define what we're actually talking about here, because there's a specific product category, and it's not what you grab at a grocery store deli. Those pre-made grocery sandwiches spoil in 2 to 3 days. The sandwiches Daniel's describing, the ones in hospitals and airlines, those are MAP packaged. Modified atmosphere packaging. They last 14 to 21 days refrigerated, and they do it without preservatives.
Which is the first thing people assume, that these things must be loaded with chemicals to last that long.
Right, and that's the biggest misconception. The air inside the package gets replaced with a mixture of nitrogen and carbon dioxide. The nitrogen is inert filler, and the CO2 suppresses mold and bacterial growth. The plastic tray itself is engineered with a specific gas permeability. It's not just any plastic, it's designed to let the right amount of oxygen in and out over the shelf life. Some of them even have oxygen scavenger sachets, which use iron powder oxidation. Same chemistry as those hand warmers you crack open in winter.
My sandwich is preserved by the same principle as pocket hand warmers. That's somehow both reassuring and deeply unsettling.
It's just chemistry. The iron powder rusts and absorbs oxygen from the sealed environment. No oxygen, no aerobic bacteria, no mold. The sandwich stays stable. It tastes like a fine sandwich. The Toyota Corolla of sandwiches.
That's actually a perfect description. It's not exciting, but it reliably gets the job done.
Let's map this supply chain, because that's really the core of what Daniel's asking. Who's making these things, and why can't you just buy them? The major players are companies most people have never heard of unless they work in food service. Flying Food Group out of Chicago produces over 50,000 sandwiches daily just for airlines. LSG Sky Chefs, part of the Lufthansa Group, is enormous. Gate Gourmet, another big one. In the UK, you've got Greencore, the institutional sandwich king of Britain. And in the US, Fresh Direct does a lot of this for corporate catering.
50,000 sandwiches a day from one facility. That's the scale we're dealing with.
The economics are fascinating. The wholesale price per unit is somewhere between $1.50 and $3, depending on filling complexity. A basic egg salad might be $1.80. A chicken pesto on ciabatta might push $3. Compare that to $6 to $9 at an airport kiosk.
A case of 48 airline-style egg salad sandwiches costs around $96 wholesale, $2 each. At an airport, those same 48 sandwiches would run you over $430. That's the price gap Daniel's intuition is pointing at. The sandwich itself is cheap to produce, the quality is consistent, the shelf life solves my problem. So why can't I just buy a case?
The answer is that the entire distribution system is built around pallets, not people. These sandwiches move through food service distributors. Sysco, US Foods, Performance Food Group are the big three broadline distributors in North America. They deliver to commercial addresses with loading docks, hospitals, university cafeterias, airline catering kitchens. The minimum order from a manufacturer like Flying Food Group is typically 100 units per SKU, and they want to deliver to a commercial kitchen, not a residential front door.
Even if I'm willing to buy 200 egg salad sandwiches, the truck isn't pulling up to my apartment building.
And even if you find a regional distributor who's more flexible, and there are plenty of independent food service distributors who work with smaller accounts, they still need a commercial delivery address and usually a reseller certificate. Their invoicing systems don't even have a field for a residential customer.
Which brings us to the first practical path, and I think this is the one Daniel was already intuiting. The business front.
The micro caterer route. This is genuinely the most viable path for an individual. You register a sole proprietorship or an LLC. In most states, this costs somewhere between $50 and a couple hundred dollars. You get a reseller certificate from your state's Department of Revenue, which lets you buy wholesale without paying sales tax up front. Then you approach a regional food distributor, not Sysco. Their minimums are brutal for a tiny account, but a local independent distributor.
When they ask what kind of business you're running, you say...
You say you're a micro caterer or an office coffee service. Both are real categories. Office coffee services are the companies that stock break room snacks and sandwiches in those glass front coolers you see in office buildings. They're small operations, often one or two people. Distributors are used to dealing with them. The minimum order for a new account might be 50 to 100 sandwiches per delivery, and they'll deliver to a business address.
The address problem remains. You've got the business entity, but the truck still needs somewhere to go.
This is where it gets creative. Option 1, virtual mailbox at a business center. Places like Regis or any executive suite that accepts packages will work. Some have refrigerated storage. Option 2, and I think this is the clever one, partner with a local coffee shop or bodega that already has a food service delivery account. Offer to pay them a small markup to add your case to their weekly order. They get a few extra bucks, you get your sandwiches.
That's elegant. You're piggybacking on existing commercial infrastructure instead of trying to build your own.
Option 3. Use a freight forwarder or food logistics company that does consolidated deliveries. There are companies that specialize in receiving palletized food shipments and breaking them down for smaller deliveries. You'd pay a premium, but it solves the last mile problem.
Now, there's an ethical dimension here that I want to sit with for a second. Daniel acknowledged it in the prompt. He said he's open to saying the sandwiches are for an ongoing conference, which arguably Home Life is. But is that deceptive? Are we telling people to lie to food distributors?
I think the honest answer is that there's a spectrum. On one end, you've got outright misrepresentation, creating a fake catering company with a fake website to buy sandwiches for personal consumption. That's fraud, and it could get you blacklisted. On the other end, you've got what I'd call the honest micro-enterprise approach. Actually start a tiny catering business. Buy 100 sandwiches, keep 20 for your family, sell or give away the other 80 to neighbors, coworkers, or kids' daycare staff. You're now a legitimate business with real customers. File the paperwork, report the income, deduct the expenses. It turns the hack into something above board.
At that point, you're not gaming the system. You're participating in it. You're just a very small participant. And there's a real community angle here. If you're a parent with a one-year-old, you probably know other parents in the same situation. A sandwich co-op is not the dumbest idea I've ever heard. 5 families splitting a weekly order of 50 sandwiches. That's 10 sandwiches per family, 2 per weekday. You're covered for lunch.
The Sandwich Collective. At $2 a sandwich wholesale, 10 sandwiches a week is $20. That's less than 2 takeout lunches.
Let me push on something, though. You mentioned freezing these. Is that actually viable? Because my instinct says freezing a pre-made egg salad sandwich is a crime against texture.
Surprisingly, most institutional sandwiches freeze well for 2 to 3 months. The key is avoiding lettuce-heavy varieties. Lettuce turns to watery mush. But egg salad, tuna salad, chicken salad, cheese, those all hold up remarkably well. The matte packaging actually helps here because the sealed environment prevents freezer burn.
You could buy 100 sandwiches, freeze 80 of them, and pull them out as needed over a couple of months.
There's a documented case of someone doing exactly this. A Reddit user in the meal prep community documented buying 200 sandwiches from a regional distributor by registering as a mobile food vendor for $50 in their city. They froze 150 of them and ate them over 3 months. They reported that the egg salad and tuna held up best, the chicken salad was fine, and the ham and cheese was acceptable, but the bread got slightly chewy.
A mobile food vendor license. That's $50 to unlock the institutional sandwich supply chain.
In that particular city. Requirements vary by jurisdiction, but the point stands. The barriers to entry for a legitimate food business are lower than most people assume. A food handler certificate is often a one-day course and a small fee. A business license is a form and a check. The real gate isn't regulation, it's knowledge. Most people just don't know the system exists.
Let's talk about what happens when you actually try to execute this. You got your LLC, your reseller certificate, you found a regional distributor. What does that conversation sound like?
You call and say you're starting an office refreshment service, the industry term for the people who stock those break room coolers, and you're looking to set up a wholesale account for prepackaged sandwiches. You'll need to provide your EIN, your reseller certificate, and a business address. They'll ask about your expected volume. You say you're starting small, testing the market, looking at 50 to 100 units per week to start.
They don't balk at that?
The big nationals will absolutely balk. Cisco's not going to bother with a 50-unit account. But independent regional distributors, they'll take that order. Their sales reps work on commission. A small account that pays on time and orders consistently is better than no account.
What about the regulatory side? If I'm reselling these sandwiches, am I taking on liability?
This is the part where people need to be careful. Under the FDA food code, these sandwiches are manufactured in inspected facilities under HACCP plans. They're safe when they leave the factory. But if you're reselling them, you become part of the chain of custody. If someone gets sick and traces it back to a sandwich you sold, you could be liable. That's why the honest micro-enterprise route matters. You get a basic business insurance policy, which for a tiny food business might be a few hundred dollars a year, and you're covered. This is exactly why suppliers are cautious about non-commercial customers. They have liability exposure if their product ends up in the hands of someone who mishandles it and then sues.
That's the grown-up answer. The fun answer is, find an institutional insider.
This is path two, and honestly, it might be the easiest for a lot of people. If you work at a hospital, a university, a large corporate campus, or if you know someone who does, go to the food service director and ask if you can buy a case through their purchasing department.
Just walk up and say, hey, can you add a case of egg salad sandwiches to your weekly Cisco order and I'll Venmo you?
You'd be surprised how often this works. Institutional food service directors are not gatekeeping the sandwich supply. They're busy people managing complex operations. If an employee says, can I buy a case of those sandwiches at cost plus 10%? A lot of them will just say yes. It's not coming out of their budget. It's literally one line item on an order they're already placing. Some hospitals even have formal employee purchase programs for this. The key is to approach it professionally. Know the specific product you want, know the case quantity, offer to pay up front, and make it zero extra work for them.
Path three is the one that requires the least creativity, but also the least commitment, retail adjacent.
Costco Business Center. Not regular Costco, the business center locations, which are different stores with different inventory. They carry institutional food service products, including prepackaged sandwiches in bulk. They're essentially the same products from the same manufacturers, just with retail labeling. You don't need a business license to shop there, just a regular Costco membership.
For people who don't live near a Costco business center.
Restaurant supply stores. Places like Restaurant Depot, which does require a business membership, but will let you in with a day pass if you're a KCBS member. That's the Kansas City Barbecue Society, and membership is like $40 a year. Or U.S. Foods Chef Store, which is open to the public in many locations. These stores carry institutional food products, including prepackaged sandwiches.
For the price of a Barbecue Society membership, I can walk into a restaurant supply store and buy the same sandwiches that airlines serve.
The Barbecue to Sandwich Pipeline, America's greatest infrastructure achievement.
I want to zoom out for a second, because what's fascinating about this whole question is what it reveals about how food distribution works. We have factories running 24/7 producing millions of sandwiches a week. The sandwiches exist. They're affordable. They solve a real problem for a lot of people. Not just Daniel, but shift workers, caregivers, anyone who needs a reliable meal backup. And yet there's this invisible wall between production and consumption that's entirely about the last mile of delivery.
The last mile is optimized for pallets, not people. That's the whole story. The food service distribution system is incredibly efficient at moving large quantities from factories to institutions. It's terrible at moving small quantities to individuals. And there's no obvious market incentive to fix that, because the margins on a $2 sandwich don't support consumer-level logistics.
Unless someone builds a business specifically around this gap. Which is actually an interesting startup question. Is there a consumer-facing version of the institutional sandwich supply chain waiting to be built?
I think there might be, especially given where food delivery costs are going. Grocery delivery is unreliable and expensive. Restaurant delivery adds a huge premium. Meal kits require cooking, which is exactly what you don't want to do when you're exhausted. A subscription service that delivers a case of institutional quality sandwiches every 2 weeks, shelf stable for up to 21 days, no prep required, $2 a sandwich. That's a compelling value proposition for a certain demographic.
The tired parent subscription. I'd invest.
You'd have to solve the cold chain logistics for residential delivery, which is not trivial. But companies like Factor and Tavala are already doing it for prepared meals. The difference is they're selling at $8 to $12 per meal. An institutional sandwich subscription could undercut that dramatically. The product already exists. You're not inventing a new sandwich. You're just building a different distribution channel for sandwiches that are already being made by the millions.
The hard part would be the unit economics. If you're buying at $2 a sandwich and selling at $3, you've got a dollar of margin to cover cold chain delivery, packaging, customer acquisition, and overhead. That's tight. But if you're doing it as a local operation, one metro area, one delivery day per week, minimal marketing, it could work. Or you go the cooperative route, a neighborhood sandwich club. One person has the business license and the distributor relationship. Everyone pulls orders. Pickup is from someone's garage.
The garage sandwich speakeasy. I love it.
Let's talk about what doesn't work, because I think it's important to be clear about the dead ends. Can you just walk into a Cisco distribution center and buy a case of sandwiches?
They're not retail. They don't have a will call counter. They don't take cash or credit cards from individuals. Their entire operation is built around account-based ordering and scheduled delivery to commercial addresses.
Can you order these sandwiches online from a consumer-facing website?
Not directly from the manufacturers. Flying Food Group doesn't have a shop page. You can find some food service products on restaurant supply websites, but they typically require business verification. There are a few gray market resellers on Amazon and eBay selling institutional food products, but you're taking a risk on storage conditions and authenticity.
Can you buy them at regular grocery stores?
Not the true institutional product. Grocery store pre-made sandwiches are a different category. Shorter shelf life, different packaging, higher price point. They're made for immediate consumption, not for sitting in your fridge for 2 weeks.
The parts that actually work are the three we've outlined. The micro-caterer route with a business license, the institutional insider route through an employer or connection, and the retail-adjacent route through restaurant supply stores or Costco Business Center.
I'd rank them by difficulty. The institutional insider route is the easiest if you have the connection. It's literally just asking someone to add a line item to an existing order. The retail adjacent route is the most accessible. No paperwork, no business entity, just a membership or a day pass. The micro caterer route is the most reliable long-term solution, but requires the most upfront effort.
There's one more angle I want to explore, and it's the one Daniel hinted at when he said he's willing to buy through his business. If you already have an LLC for your actual work, Daniel runs a tech communications business. Can you just use that?
You can, but you need to be thoughtful about it. If your LLC is registered as a technology consulting firm and you're suddenly buying 200 sandwiches a week from a food distributor, that's going to raise questions. The distributor sales rep is going to look at your account and say, "What exactly is the tech consultant doing with all these sandwiches?"
You'd need a plausible business purpose.
Which is where the ongoing conference framing comes in. If your business regularly hosts client meetings, workshops, or events, ordering sandwiches for those events is completely legitimate. The question is whether a standing weekly order passes the sniff test. A conference is typically a one-time or periodic thing, not every Tuesday.
a co-working space or an office with regular staff lunch provisions. That's a standing order. If your business has employees and you provide lunch as a perk, you're now in the office food service category, which is exactly what these distributors serve.
That's the cleaner framing. I run a small business with 5 employees and we provide lunch. I need a standing weekly order of 25 sandwiches. That's a normal account for a regional distributor. No deception required.
If you don't have 5 employees? If it's just you and your wife working from home with a toddler?
Then you're back to the micro caterer route or the institutional insider route. Or you just accept the slightly higher price point and buy from a restaurant supply store where no one asks questions.
I think what I appreciate most about Daniel's question is that it's not really about sandwiches. It's about the invisible architecture of everyday life. There are these massive systems, food production, distribution, logistics, that shape what's available to us, and most of the time we don't see them. We just experience their effects. The empty fridge at 7 p.m. The takeout menu, that's the only option. The sandwich at the hospital that makes you think, wait, why can't I have this at home?
Once you start seeing those systems, you can't unsee them. Every product on every shelf is the endpoint of a supply chain that was designed for someone else, usually a business, not a consumer. The question is always, can I hack my way into that chain? Sometimes the answer is yes, with enough paperwork and creativity. Sometimes it's no, because the economics don't work at individual scale. And sometimes the answer is, not yet, but someone should build it.
The institutional sandwich subscription for busy parents. I'm telling you, there's a business there. Someone listening to this is going to start it, and Daniel will be their first customer.
Let's run through the concrete takeaways. Path 1, register a business, get a reseller certificate, approach a regional independent food distributor, not Sysco, not US Foods, find a local one, and set up an account as a micro caterer or office refreshment service. Expect minimum orders of 50 to 100 units. Freeze what you don't eat immediately, avoiding lettuce-heavy varieties. Path 2, find a local hospital, university, or corporate cafeteria, ask the food service director if they can add a case to their weekly order, offer to pay up front. Path 3, visit a Costco business center or a restaurant supply store like US Foods, Chef Store or Restaurant Depot, buy institutional sandwich packs off the shelf with no business verification required beyond a basic membership.
The key thing to remember is that the barrier isn't supply. The factories are running. The sandwiches exist. The barrier is entirely in the last mile of distribution, which is built for pallets, not people. Everything we've described is just different ways of bridging that gap.
The other thing to remember is that most of these sandwiches don't use preservatives. The shelf life comes from the gas mixture in the packaging, not from chemicals. And they freeze better than you'd expect, especially egg salad, tuna, and chicken salad. Stay away from anything with fresh lettuce.
The lettuce is the enemy of the frozen sandwich. Words to live by.
I want to add one more thing. There's a regulatory consideration around reselling that people should take seriously. If you're buying these sandwiches and selling them to others, even at cost, even to friends, you're technically a food retailer. Your state's health department may require a food establishment permit. The requirements vary wildly by jurisdiction, but it's worth checking before you start a neighborhood sandwich ring.
The sandwich ring, which sounds like a criminal enterprise, but is actually just tired parents sharing egg salad.
The most wholesome black market in America.
The open question I want to leave people with is the one we touched on earlier. Is there a real business to be built here? As food delivery costs keep rising and grocery delivery remains unreliable in a lot of places, the demand for shelf-stable, affordable, no-prep meal backup is only going to grow. The institutional sandwich supply chain already produces exactly that product at exactly the right price point. The missing piece is consumer-facing distribution. Someone's going to figure that out.
The weirdest prompts really do reveal the most interesting systems. A tired parent looking at a hospital sandwich hamper accidentally discovered a multi-billion dollar industry that's completely invisible to consumers. That's what I love about this show. And now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
The octopus's ability to change color using chromatophores was once attributed to a French naturalist in the 1920s who claimed the mechanism was hydraulic pressure from seawater pumped through the skin. This was later corrected by a German research team working from field notes collected near Lake Chad, of all places, who demonstrated that chromatophores are controlled by direct neural innervation. The muscles around each pigment sac contract or relax independently, and no seawater pumping is involved.
For octopus research.
The Germans really will set up a field station anywhere.
This has been My Weird Prompts. Our producer is Hilbert Flumingtop. If you enjoyed this episode, leave us a review wherever you listen. It helps other people find the show. I'm Herman Poppleberry.
I'm Korn. We'll be back with another prompt soon.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.